next case is case 10-1091, Thomas Barbary versus Allstate Insurance Company. On behalf of Nationwide, Joyce Kimbler.
May it please the court, Chief Justice O'Connor, opposing counsel. I am Joyce Kimbler. I'm here for Nationwide Insurance in this matter. We are the appellant. We are appealing from a decision of the Ninth District Court of Appeals. And the issue in this case is rather narrow and defined. And we appreciate that you're taking your time to look at yet another underinsured motorist case. In this particular matter, the issue is whether the presence of an exhaustion clause contained within an underinsured motorist provision renders ambiguous language that limits the time in which the cause of action is to be brought. The statute, RC 3718H, specifically states that insurance companies may put within their policy a provision which limits the time in which to bring an underinsured motorist claim. The statute specifically states that this can be done and limit the claim to the time to bring the claim to a three-year period of time.
Counsel, was Nationwide factually unaware of this claim until the statute had run, or were they aware of the potential for this claim if the other coverages available from the tortfeasor would be exhausted without fully compensating your insured?
Nationwide was aware of the litigation that was going on in Wisconsin. In fact, the original litigation that was filed in Wisconsin was filed by Nationwide arising out of a subrogation action. The Barbies then filed their own personal injury case in Wisconsin. So Nationwide was aware, also because they had been brought in by Wisconsin law into the Wisconsin case, which was filed in federal court.
They filed in Wisconsin before the...
The initial case was filed by Nationwide for a subrogation action against the tortfeasors. And so the determination was made that when the original cases went forward in Wisconsin on liability only, that was in the Nationwide subrogation action. So Nationwide was aware that there was an accident. Nationwide was aware that there were issues of liability. Nationwide was aware that there were issues of the damages and the apportionment of the liability and what the damages might be. But Nationwide was never put on specific notice that there was being presented an underinsured motorist claim.
Well, they were certainly aware of the fact that they had coverage for that, weren't they?
Nationwide was aware that the policy did contain underinsured motorist coverage, but they were never told by the insureds, we are going to be presenting a underinsured motorist claim in this matter. And the more importantly, pursuant to the policy, which requires that the claim and or the action be brought within 3 years, that action, that positive action was never taken by the insureds in this matter.
So, counsel, my understanding then of Nationwide's position here is that they should have been a named party.
Correct.
When the plaintiffs filed their action against the tortfeasors, they should have included Nationwide and the other Allstate Insurance Company, and you would have then, what, the action with regards to Nationwide as a defendant would have been stayed until the first part of the litigation was resolved?
There's two different ways that the insureds could have handled it in this matter. In the Wisconsin action, because Wisconsin law required it, they did join Nationwide as to the MedPay only. So they made a medical payments claim in the Wisconsin action against Nationwide. But when they filed their complaint against Nationwide in Wisconsin and asked for medical payments coverage, they did not ask for underinsured motorist coverage. Now, they could have done what the other passenger in the vehicle did in this case and filed a separate action in Ohio. For instance, the other passenger filed an action in Lorain County, and that action was stayed awaiting the determination of the other issues in Wisconsin. But they should have taken some action, either including us in the Wisconsin action for the underinsured motorist claim or filing a separate lawsuit in Ohio for the underinsured motorist claim.
How is Nationwide disadvantaged by what happened here?
Nationwide was disadvantaged by what happened here because we were not an active participant in the part of the litigation that went to the determination of damages. Now, in this particular action—
You have not acted as an intervener?
Nationwide could have intervened in that action. It was filed in federal court and it was filed in Wisconsin. I don't know if they have the same law in Wisconsin and as an intervening party as they have in Ohio. If this had been filed in Ohio, Nationwide could have intervened. But the burden isn't on Nationwide under the policy or under the statute to take the action. The statute says that the policy may put that burden on the insured, and we have a right to rely then that the insured will comply with that policy provision. The policy says that you must comply with all the terms and conditions contained within the policy in order to have coverage. One of those terms and conditions is that the insurer take the action to file the underinsured motorist litigation against Nationwide.
Would you agree that the plaintiff here did not have a cause of action against Nationwide for underinsured or uninsured motorist coverage until the amount of coverage that was awarded to them, the amount of compensation that was awarded to them in the litigation was finalized?
No, I think that that is a basic error in the analysis of both the trial court and the Ninth District Court of Appeals. I believe that under Ross versus Farmers, the cause of action accrues, and they have a cause of action, a right to bring suit immediately following the accident.
Even if they in good faith can't sustain that Nationwide owes me X amount of dollars, that I was damaged in this amount, the availability of coverage by the tortfeasors won't cover my damages, and I do have uninsured, underinsured motorists, so Nationwide needs to pay me. And they knew none of those things at the time.
That is not the hallmark. Under Ross versus Farmers, I believe that the standard is your cause of action accrues at the time that the accident occurs. That's because while it is a contract between the parties, the triggering condition precedent is actually the tort that occurs. Once the tort occurs, there is the potential for the claim, and they have the right to bring that claim at that time. Then the liability and the damages are just a normal issue to be sorted out in litigation.
And is it Nationwide's position here that they would have preferred to have been sued, and they prefer to be sued in any case in which they have written or issued insurance?
Yes, that is the way that it's commonly handled throughout the state of Ohio.
Counsel, the policy language, number 10, sued against us, however, wouldn't lead a reasonable insured reading that to think that they could, that you wanted them to file suit for uninsured motorists, because it says no lawsuit may be filed against us by anyone claiming any of the coverages provided in this policy until the said person has fully complied with all the terms and conditions of this policy, et cetera. And it doesn't say, however, if you're making a claim for uninsured motorist coverage, you may sue us at your earliest opportunity.
The difference is that the exhaustion of the underlying policy, again, as stated in Ross versus Farmers, is not a condition precedent. It's not a term that the insured has to comply with before the cause of action accrues and before suit could be filed. As the courts have noted, as Ross versus Farmers and the various appellate courts have noted.
But if you're an insured who's not an attorney, you're not going to be searching for that case to see whether or not when you're allowed to file this suit, are you?
In this particular case, the insured was represented by counsel, so it is not a fact in this case that the insured was in any way misled or did not understand. And as any contract, you're assumed that you understand the provisions of your contract. If you don't understand the provisions of your contract, you should seek legal counsel. But there is no indication throughout the case law that there would be a requirement on the insured to exhaust the underlying policy limits before the cause of action accrued and before they had a right to bring suit.
But when did that claim ripen?
I apologize.
When did that claim ripen?
The claim ripened, and you're drawing the distinction between when it accrued and when it ripened. I think that the claim ripens during the course of the litigation.
And if that's so, how could suit have been brought at an earlier point?
I think suit can be brought once the claim accrues. I think that the accrual is sufficient ripening to bring the suit because it's just then another factor to be determined through the course of the litigation.
You could largely generate all sorts of uninsured or underinsured motorist claims in virtually every case. And wouldn't the defense be We have to wait until the determination is made in the primary litigation before we know whether or not there's any liability in the underinsured or uninsured situation. And we would just flood courts with all sorts of, on that theory.
Actually, that is the way it's being done in the state of Ohio presently. In most cases, what happens is once the insured brings the liability action against the tortfeasor, they just bring the insurance company in at the same time. And what you do is you then go through discovery, you find out what are the damages, what are the various policy limits, what is the likelihood that this is going to exceed the underlying policy limits, and those issues are sorted out through the litigation.
And are those cases stayed pending the determination of the primary?
No, because it's all in one case. Normally what happens is that because the policy does require the insured to let us know when suit has been filed, they normally file the suit against the tortfeasor. They just add the insurance company at the same time, and everything gets sorted out in one litigation. If the suit is filed against the tortfeasor, they notify us that suit has been filed, and we so desire at that time, we can then intervene in the action if necessary, if they don't join us.
When was it that the Wisconsin court made the determination of the 70% and 30% liability?
When was it that they made that?
Yes.
That
was prior to the expiration of the 3-year period.
Correct.
So how many months did the claimant have to comply with the 3-year period of the policy?
The suit was brought, I believe, 4 years and 3 months after the accident. So they had probably about 3 months in there once both the liability and damages had been determined to bring the suit in Ohio, if they had wanted to wait until there was a total determination of liability and damages.
So in this case, when after the court made the determination of liability, the claimant had an opportunity to comply with the 3-year period in the provision, and that's what 39-37-18 says, that these suits may be brought within the 3-year period of the date of the accident.
That is correct. They would have had that opportunity. The statute says they may be brought. The policy says they must be brought.
Well, the claim or suit.
Ms. Kimbler, isn't it the question of ambiguity of the policy here? When you have the reference to the exhaustion clause, or as Justice Kupp had stated, you don't sue us until all the terms and conditions of the policy have been met. How does that jibe with the issue of the statute or the time for bringing the lawsuit against Nationwide? It seems to me that you look at ambiguity and you say, are there two reasonable ways to read this policy? If there are, then ambiguity has been shown.
Again, going back to this court's decision in Ross versus Farmers, this court has said that it should not be read that exhaustion is a prerequisite or condition precedent to coverage. So a lawyer, I believe, could not read an ambiguity into that. I believe that even a layperson would understand that when the exhaustion says we will not make any payment, it's putting a condition on the insurance company and saying this is what must happen before the insurance company does anything. It's not putting a condition precedent upon the insured saying this is what the insured must do before you may bring the litigation. So I don't think that the two sections, even to a layperson, creates an ambiguity.
Counsel, once this Nationwide is brought in, do they attempt to interject themselves in the underlying litigation against the tortfeasor?
Normally what happens in those types of cases is that Nationwide will sit out on the sidelines and agree to be bound by what happens, unless it appears that there's going to be a situation in which there's going to be a substantial risk of exposure for damages, and then Nationwide will participate. But
So you want to be at the table while you're insured goes after the tortfeasor.
We are willing to work with the insured so that you are not unnecessarily interjecting the existence of insurance into the litigation so as to prejudice the insured in any way. We do not want prejudice to either the insured or to the insurance company by Nationwide's presence at the table. We simply want an opportunity to participate in a process that's going to result in our personal responsibility for the damages.
Okay. By not being at the table, that means you hide out in the back of the courtroom during the trial, but when it comes to settling cases, Nationwide, by God, has to be consulted or we may blow you off on your underinsured coverage.
By both the policy and case law, the tortfeasor their limits must be exhausted. You must get permission from the insurance company to exhaust those limits.
Okay, I think I understand the deal.
Thank you. We would ask that you reverse the decision of the Ninth District Court of Appeals and establish a rule of law that there is no ambiguity in this situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Flowers?
Good morning, Ms. Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Paul Flowers. I represent the plaintiff appellees in this case, Thomas Barbie et al. I thought I'd start out just with addressing the initial questions that dealt with what did Nationwide know and when did they know it. And I had an opportunity after those questions were asked to look at the stipulations. And paragraph 7 of the stipulations, which is part of the record, states that within 1 year of the date of the accident, plaintiff's counsel placed both Nationwide and Allstate on notice of potential underinsured motorist claims. This case is and always has been about a pure technicality. Nationwide has not been prejudiced in any manner. They have always known that a potential for underinsured motorist coverage exists. They could have intervened to pursue those rights, a declaratory judgment if they wanted to. In Wisconsin, that would make no sense since the claim hadn't ripened. It was purely hypothetical at that point and probably would have been dismissed. But they have always known that this could happen, that if the judge in Wisconsin ruled a certain way, we would then have an underinsured motorist.
And let me just stop you right there. You just said, had it been filed in Wisconsin, it probably would have been dismissed.
Correct.
All right. It would have been dismissed. Why? Nationwide would have said, you can't sue us?
Nationwide would have said, we're bringing a declaratory judgment action to determine whether there's underinsured motorist coverage. I'm willing to bet the judge would have said, you're way ahead of yourself. We don't have an underinsured motorist yet. Your claim is dismissed.
But if it would have been the other way, where the plaintiff had filed against Nationwide, which is what they're saying should have happened.
Correct.
Then they would not have been dismissed from that case.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely what?
They would have been dismissed. They would be dismissed here in Ohio for sure. We know that now because...
Well, wait a second. How would they have gotten dismissed if they were the uninsured motorist cover? How would they, if they're sued along with the tortfeasor and anybody else that's, you know, tangentially related here, how would they have been dismissed from that case?
There was no denial of underinsured motorist coverage. There was no underinsured motorist. Nationwide and Allstate didn't say from the get-go, there's no coverage here, you need to bring a deck action. Their position was, there might be coverage, we have to wait and see, then we'll make our decision. That is absolutely their positions.
When did they say that in this case?
Well, that has to be their positions because they can't know that there's an underinsured motorist until the federal judge rules.
Well, I understand that, but they wouldn't be dismissed from any case unless they moved for dismissal.
Correct.
Well, they're not going to... Their position here is they should have been included, and then they would have been sitting by the sidelines. So they're not going to ask for a dismissal as to them in this action. They're arguing just the opposite. They wanted to be included.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. You know, I think they're saying that now because it gets them out of coverage. I'm not so sure they wanted to be joined in back then. They didn't intervene. They could have.
How would that work if they were put on notice because they were sued for uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage on the theory that maybe that will be needed here, and then they make a motion and the court grants them that they can be dismissed from this action, and then 3 years pass, and lo and behold, there is an award that exceeds the tortfeasor's ability to compensate, and what, at that point, then you sue Nationwide, and they're... What you're proposing here is illogical and really doesn't...
I think it is illogical. It is illogical.
Illogical,
not
yes.
What I'm proposing. This scenario that they've come up with, this idea of there's a potential for an uninsured motorist. We don't know yet, but there's a potential. You need to sue us now. Bring us in now.
Okay, and the representations made here is it's done all the time in Ohio.
Yeah,
that's what happens.
Right.
That we are sued. We want to be sued. Just sue us, and we will then be, you know, in the game here, and we will wait our turn at bat, and then we will, take appropriate action. But just
right.
Put us on notice by suing us. And you're saying that does not happen in the world of automobile accident coverage in the state of Ohio?
Oh, it happens sometimes. It doesn't happen sometimes. I mean, some lawyers will do it. Some lawyers won't. What we're missing here is that what they're asking for is a purely advisory decision to be filed against them. I mean, there's got to be a reason there's no amicus support for Nationwide in this case. I mean, I haven't argued a case here against an insurance company where there weren't five or six amicus briefs. I mean, lawyers are eager to write amicus briefs for insurance companies. There's not one here. I really don't think the industry wants this. I really think this is just here because in this case, they can get out of coverage. I argued Kincaid here 6 months ago, and in Kincaid, we brought this class action where we're seeking benefits for insureds. They hadn't applied for them, but they were still due to them. And Nationwide filed an amicus brief. Lots of other insurance companies filed an amicus brief saying, you're going to open the floodgate. It's an advisory decision or an advisory complaint that's being filed asking for an advisory decision. You have to have a ripened controversy before you can have a claim.
But what I'm confused about is, if I understand the facts of this case, the statute says that any policy of insurance that includes underinsured motorist coverage may include terms requiring that as long as there is no prejudice, the insurer's subrogation rights, each claim should be brought within 3 years after the date of the accident.
Correct.
So that's a statutory obligation that they can incorporate that into the policy, and it was incorporated here. The determination on liability between the tortfeasors was made by the court, I think, 3 months before the expiration of that three-year period.
Right.
And one party was 30% liable, the other party was 70% liable. So it would occur to me that a claimant could file a case within the three-year period of what the statute requires and the policy requires after the court made the determination, and that was not done here.
Well, right.
I think if I got the facts correct.
Yes. That was July 7, 2005. We have this decision apportioning liability 30%, 70%.
So if the statute says it can be part of the contract, and if in fact it is part of the contract, and if in fact the determination is made and there's a three-month period to incorporate it, and as you argued to us, they knew there was a potential claim, obviously the claimant knew there was a potential claim, it just didn't get filed on time.
Right.
Why should we not enforce the provisions of the contract in this case?
Well, two reasons. First of all, this three-month time window, you have to remember, there also has to be an opportunity then for the insurance company to reject the underinsured motorist claim. That's Kincaid. Kincaid says they are entitled to opportunity. You can't sue them before that. 3 months, there's no evidence here that they announced right after that decision, hey, we're not paying you. And they wouldn't have because it hadn't expired at that point. It's up in the air. Secondly, in Crayley versus Van Newkirk, the decision out of this court in 1994, it says it's not just enough that you have time.
Isn't the statute amendment in 01 subsequent to Crayley, and doesn't it sort of supersede Crayley?
I don't view that at all. And just Crayley says that you have to have a reasonable amount of time. The statute, and this was always my impression, was that this new subsection H was one of the few parts of the statutory revisions that actually benefited plaintiffs. It was intended to benefit the insureds.
Is it your view that after you get a determination on liability among two tortfeasors that you don't have 3 months to file a uninsured motorist claim?
Correct.
Is unreasonable?
That's not a reasonable amount of time. Kincaid says you have to have a rejection first. You have to allow the insurance company an opportunity to review it and reject it. And there's
Was
there a rejection in this case or a request for the coverage within that period?
There was the request a year after the accident. That's paragraph 7.
But it wasn't within that three-month period.
Well, it was well before. The question here, whether they rejected it or not, They don't have any evidence of that. And in a statute of limitations defense, they have the burden of proof. So they don't win on that. And in their brief, they're not arguing that there's 3 months there, that was plenty of time. It isn't. I mean, you have to have a period for them to review it. In Crailey versus Van Newkirk says you need a reasonable amount of time. But getting back to the statutory amendment, I mean, that statute benefited insureds because it was always the law that you could have a 2-year time to sue clause, and then the statute changes it to 3. And that's the only change. All the common law that was there, there's no indication that the General Assembly intended to override that. And we've got a decision from 1907, which shows how old these clauses are, the Apple case, saying that you have to afford the insureds a reasonable time to bring suit, even though these clauses are enforceable. So the 3-month window there isn't enough. And then and the federal action wasn't even done. We have another decision in December of 2005 that wraps it up at that point with the damage awards. So that all said, really it comes down.
Can you go back to that point for me, please? Sure. So you're saying in July when the decision was issued, wasn't it then that the federal court apportioned liability was in July of 05?
Correct, the 70-30.
Okay, so at that point you knew that the soldier, the federal employee, was not going to be liable at more than 51%?
Correct.
Okay, so at that point, do you not assess the need to file for uninsured motorists?
Correct. That's when you could. You would have an uninsured motorist at that point, but the complaint was filed within 3 years of that, easily within 3 years. It's filed in January 2007. So it's within that window. And that's.
So there was a conscious decision to wait, to not act and present a demand to the insurance company that we now have damages, we now have liability apportioned, our damages exceed what is going to be able to be forthcoming from the tortfeasors. So you're going to wait and to present that to the insurance company for underinsured motorist coverage.
Well, I wouldn't say there's a conscious decision because I wasn't there. I'm the appellate lawyer.
You wouldn't make a decision like that, Mr. Flowers.
Well, you know, I might. There's this whole idea that a lawyer should be able to look at this policy and say, aha, you know, this is when it starts, this is when it's due, and so forth. And I don't think so. I mean, 4 judges, the trial judge, Judge Maraldi, and 3 Court of Appeals judges have all looked at it and said the same thing, that, hey, you can read this different ways.
They're saying ambiguity, but then, you know, and that's what they're hanging their head on, is that the language of the policy is ambiguous when no lawsuit may be filed against us by anyone claiming any of the coverages provided until said person has fully complied with all the terms and conditions. And then the limits and conditions of payment section is allegedly read as ambiguous or confusing here. No payment will be made. Well, presumably payment isn't going to be forthcoming until a lawsuit, a demand, a liability is found.
Correct.
So that is not a limiting, that doesn't have to happen first before you can comply with no lawsuit may be filed against us until, you know, certain things happen.
There, correct.
One's talking about filing, one's talking about payment. Two
right.
Totally different things.
Well, to back up, first of all, the Ninth District is only saying that this policy is unambiguous under these facts, which are unusual facts to say the least. Under these facts, the policy doesn't make much sense on when to sue. But to answer your question, yeah, there's this whole issue about the exhaustion clause, and the Ninth District talks a lot about the exhaustion clause. You don't need to go there, because here, you don't even have an uninsured motorist. You don't have an uninsured motorist until the court issues that decision in June 2005.
But Mr. Flowers, the contract itself talks about 3 years after the date of the accident causing the bodily injury. It doesn't say 3 years after the cause of action arises.
Correct.
So what you're suggesting is that the contract itself should be unilaterally modified or modified by this court? And can we do that when, as Justice O'Donnell pointed out, the statute itself says that you can, right, say 3 years after the date of the accident, not cause of action?
I would never advocate such judicial activism here, but I think if you look at the policy and what is glossed over is the actual language. You have the suits against us clause, the compliance clause, and right after it, In the three-year time to sue clause you're quoting, the very first sentence is subject to the preceding paragraph. And I think Nationwide's policy is unique in this regard because they make it very clear that our time to sue clause is subordinate to our compliance clause.
Does this appellate decision create some new law on this issue, or is it really fact-specific to this unusual case? Is there a reason we want to write anything, or should we improv this?
I was surprised the court took this. I mean, it's one of the strangest fact patterns I'd ever seen, from the accident to the suit against the federal employee to so forth and so on. I mean, it really is one of these strange cases where there would have been no uninsured motorist coverage at all if the judge had made the ruling that a lot of people were anticipating. So it makes no sense to file your lawsuit early and go through all that time and waste, even when the insurance companies don't have a decision yet on what they're going to do either. It made perfect sense to wait, see what happens, see if they're willing to pay at that point. If not, file the lawsuit in Lorain County. That's the most efficient and the most pragmatic way to approach this. And you're not going to get this scenario again, so I'm not sure how the ruling in this case would make a whole lot of precedential impact.
But we don't have the other case before us, do we? The one that was filed in Lorain County.
Right. That one should have been dismissed under Kincaid. I mean, Allstate had not rejected the claim, but they filed anyway. It accomplished nothing and really was just a waste of a fee and some time by lawyers in the court there, the Donnelly case.
And it wasn't resolved to benefit the plaintiff?
Oh, the plaintiffs in that case and in our case have all been paid by Allstate. Allstate's paid everyone, not settled. I mean, they paid their judgment. So it is resolved. The Ninth District, I think, handled appropriately. Just to sum up, you don't really need to go that far because rather than look at all the exhaustion issues and so forth, really what matters here is that you didn't have an uninsured motorist at all until July of 2005, and the complaint was filed within that three-year period after that. So we would ask you to affirm the Ninth District Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kimbler, you've used all your time. You may have 30 seconds.
For determination here is when does the cause of action accrue so that the time limit starts to run. Specifically on the facts of this case, they had 6 months from the date of the liability determination until the complaint was filed. These facts are not that unusual. These facts happen all the time in every case. In every case, there's a question about liability. In every case,
counsel,
there's a question
I thought
of
your
damage.
Position was, though, that if this judge hadn't decided this until 4 years after the accident, and suit had not been filed, tough luck.
Your Honor, and that is correct, because the accrual is at the time of the accident, not when that determination is made. You cannot tie the accrual of the action and the starting of the time limit to the exhaustion of the policy.
So when the federal judge made this determination of 70-30, really has nothing to do with your claim that you don't have to pay?
Only to the extent that there was still 6 months within that 3 years that they could have filed the action if they had so desired at that time.
I thought it was 3 months.
That's because that was a misconception. It was the decision was made on July 5th, 2005. The complaint was filed on January 18th of the following year. So it was actually 6 months from liability to complaint filing. It was a shorter period of time from the determination of damages until the complaint filing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we will take this matter under advisement. You will be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you take a recess?